Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind. Graphic Audio presents The Demon Cycle, Book 2, The Desert Spear, Part 2. Created by Peter V. Brett. Narrated by Dylan Lynch. With performances by Thomas Penny, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Kimberly Gilbert, Melissa Wilmoth, Bradley Smith, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Nick DePinto, MJ Casey, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, Johan Detweiler, Christopher Graybill, Stephen Carpenter, Christopher Sheeran, Terrence Aselford, Ren Casey, Katie Karkoff, Nanette Savard, Karen Novak, Thomas Keegan, Daniel Sontag, Patrick Bussing, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Drew Copus, Alexander Strain, and Mort Shelby. The Desert Spear, Part 2.
Leisha's parents' home came into sight. It was a modest house, considering her father's means, but it served her family well enough, built against the back wall of her father's paper shop. The path leading to the front door was warded. Not that Roger was paying much attention. He walked slightly behind Leisha so he could gaze at her without her noticing. Her pale skin was a sharp contrast to her night black hair, and her eyes were the color of sky on a clear day. His eyes drifted over her curves. Leisha turned to him suddenly.
Thanks again for doing this, Roger.
It's hardly a chore to sit through a meal, even if your mother's cooking could try a Corling's teeth.
If I show up alone, she'll plague me until I'm ready to spit over when I'm gonna find a husband. With you there, she might at least cover her fangs. Perhaps she'll even take us for a pair and draw off entirely.
You wouldn't mind your mother thinking us a pair?
I'd love it. Most of the town would accept it, too. Only you and Arlen and I would know how ridiculous it is.
I wish you wouldn't call him that.
Arlen! It's just his name, Roger. I'm not going to pretend he doesn't have one, however mysterious he wants to seem.
I say let him seem as he likes. Eric always said if you rehearse an act you never mean the audience to see, sooner or later they'll see it. All you need is one slip, and his name will be on every lip in town.
So what if it is? The warded man isn't comfortable in town because folk treat him differently. Admitting he has a name might go a ways toward fixing that.
You don't know what he's left behind him. Could be some folks might get hurt if his name gets out, or others might come hunting him with some account to settle. I know what it's like to live like that, Leisha. The warded man saved my life. And if he doesn't want his name out, I mean to forget I know it, even if it means giving up the song of the century.
You can't just forget things you've learned.
Not all of us have as much space upstairs as you. Some of us fill right up and forget the old things we have no use for.
That's nonsense. Anyway, thank you again. I've no end of men volunteering to stand up in front of demons for me, but not one who'll stand in front of my mother.
Reckon Garrett Cutter would do both.
He's as much my mother's creature as any. Garrett destroyed my life, and she wants me to forgive him and make him baby still. As if him taking so well to demon-killing somehow makes him a catch worth having. She's nothing but a manipulative witch. Poison everyone around her.
Bah! She's not so bad. Understand her, and you can play her like a fiddle.
You're underestimating her. Men see her beauty and refuse to look past it. You may think it's you doing the charming, but in truth, she'll be seducing you like she does every man, turning them against me.
Well, that's tampweed talk. Alona isn't some correspondent genius bent on destroying your life.
You just don't know her well enough.
Eric taught me all about women, and he said the ones like your mom, who were really beautiful once but are starting to show their age, are all the same. Alona was always the center of attention when she was young, and that's the only way she knows how to interact in the world. You and your father have long conversations about warding that she's no part of, and it makes her starve to be noticed any way she can. Make her think she's the center of attention, even if she's not, and she'll eat out of your hand.
Your master didn't know a thing about women.
He sure seemed to, considering how adept he was at bedding them.
And how many has his apprentice bedded using those brilliant techniques?
Kissing tales aren't the kind I spin, but a Milanese son says they work on your mum.
Taken.
So, the merchant tells Eric,
I pay you to teach my wife to dance.
And Eric, calm as dawn, looks at him and says, I did. Ain't my fault she preferred to do it lying down.
Alona sloshed wine from her cup as she banged it on the table. Leisha scowled at them from the other end of the table where she and her father were talking. The plates had long since been cleared. Ernie sat leafing through the book Leisha had brought him, his eyes tiny behind the thin, wire-framed glasses that never seemed to leave the edge of his nose. Finally, he set it aside for later, gesturing at the stack of bound leather books in front of Leisha.
Only had time to make a few more. You filled them faster than I can bind.
Blame my apprentices. They make 3 copies for every book I fill.
Still, I only had 1 grimoire of wards my entire life and never filled it. How many is this you've made now? 12?
17, but it's as much demonology as wards, and more comes from the warded man than me. Just copying the wards on his skin filled several books.
Oh, and how much of his skin have you seen?
Mother!
Oh, Creator knows I'm not judging. You could do worse than bear the deliverer's child. Even if he is a horror to look at. But you best get to it if that's your plan. Plenty younger and more fertile than you will soon be vying for the privilege.
He's not the deliverer, Mum.
That's not how everyone else tells it. Even Garrod worships him.
Oh, and if Garrod Cutter thinks something, it must be right.
Speaking of the warded man, where has he got off to? Smith tells me another messenger's come from the Duke, summoning him to an audience, but again, he's nowhere to be found on messenger day.
I doubt he much cares about an audience with the Duke. He doesn't consider himself one of Rhinebeck's subjects.
Well, you'd best tell him to think twice. The Hollow isn't producing wood like it should, and Rhinebeck is getting angry. Ignoring messengers may hold him off now, while the road is choked with snow and he can't send a sizable force, but come spring melt, the Duke will want answers. And assurance that Deliverer's Hollow remains loyal.
Does it? If the warded man sets himself at odds with Rhinebeck, the Hollow would likely flock to his banner in an instant.
Yes, and the other hamlets as well, and probably a great many folk in Fort Angiers itself. The warded man could start a civil war with a word, which is why it's all the more important he declare his intentions before Rhinebeck does something rash.
I'll talk to him. I have unfinished business in Angiers myself.
The only unfinished business you have is under your skirts.
At least I can keep mine around my ankles.
Don't you take that tone with me. I may not know anything about politics or demonology, but I know you're a winter away from becoming a spinster crone. And no matter how many Corlings you leave dead behind you, you'll still go to your grave regretting not having added life to the world.
I'm the town herb gatherer. Saving those who would have otherwise died doesn't count as adding life to the world?
Vika saves lives. Didn't stop her raising a brood for tender Jonah. Midwife Darcy'd do the same in an instant if she could find a man to close his eyes and stiffen long enough to put a child in her homely womb.
Darcy's done more for this town than you ever will, Mother.
Nonsense! I did my duty. Gave the town you. You may be ungrateful for it, but I think the Hollow benefits well enough from my troubles. Any fool watching you and the warded man together can tell there's been something between you, and that it's not to either of your satisfaction. Did he fail a bed? Darcy gives me herbs for your father when he...
That's ridiculous! Leisha would never...
Well, she sure ain't going with you. It's plain as day you got the eye for her, but you ain't good enough, fiddle boy, and you know it.
You've got no right to talk to him like that, Mother. You don't know
what... Always what I don't know. Like your poor mum is too dim to see the sun shining in her face. Like I know the boy's song about how the warded man found you after you was left for dead by bandits on the road. And I know how men treat women like us when there ain't no one to stop them.
Mother!
Not how I'd wanted you to lose your flower, But it was time it was done somehow, and I expect you're the better for it.
Get your cloak, Roger. It's getting dark, and we're safer out among the demons.
Leisha shoved the blank books into her satchel and set it over her shoulder as she snatched her richly embroidered cloak from the peg by the door and threw it about her shoulders. Ernie came over, hands spread in apology. Leisha embraced him as Roger put on his cloak. Alona stayed at the table with the wine.
I really wish you wouldn't walk around after dark, magic cloak or no. We can't exactly replace you.
Roger has his fiddle, and I have more tricks than wards of unsight if a Corallin were to somehow find us. We're quite safe.
You can witch all the core to your bidding, but not a simple man.
Now do you believe me?
Seems I owe you a son.
Leisha and Roger headed back to the village proper. Their breath fogged in the crisp winter air, but their cloaks were lined with fur and kept them warm enough. Roger hadn't said a word since Alona's comment. His head was down, face buried under long locks of red hair. His fiddle was tucked in its case, slung beneath his motley cloak, but she could tell from the way his fingers flexed that he longed to hold it. He always played the fiddle when he was upset. Leisha knew Roger shined on her. Most everyone knew, really. Half the women in town thought she was mad for not snatching him up. And why not? Roger had a boyishly pretty face and a quick wit. His music was beautiful beyond words, and he could bring a laugh from Leisha when she was at her lowest. He'd shown more than once that he was willing to die for her. But try as she might, Leisha could not bring herself to see him as a lover. Roger had barely seen 18 winters, a full 10 years younger than her, and he was her friend. In many ways, Roger was her only friend, the only person she trusted. He was the little brother she'd never had. She didn't want to hurt him.
Your apprentice Kendall saw me the other day. Pretty girl.
My best student, too.
She asked if I knew how to brew a love potion.
Wait, can you?
Of course not. But the girl doesn't need to know that. I gave her a tincture of sweet tea instead and told her to share it with her would-be love. Watch out if she offers you tea or you might be in for a night of kissing.
Never stick your apprentice.
Another of Master Eric's brilliant maxims.
And one I'm happy to report he practiced as well as he preached. I knew other apprentices in the guild who weren't so lucky.
This hardly compares. Kendall's nearly as old as you are. And she's the one buying the love potions.
Roger shrugged and put his hood up, pulling the edges of his motley cloak together to strengthen the ward net. The last of the light had faded, and all around them misty forms were rising from the snow, solidifying into corlings, scenting them in the air, but unable to find them. A wood demon wandered into Roger's path, sniffing the air. Roger froze, not daring to move as it searched.
Just walk around it, Roger. It can't see or hear you.
It's just unnatural, walking plain as day through hordes of corlings.
How many times must we do it before you tire of saying that? The cloaks are safe as houses.
The cloaks of unsight were her own invention, based on wards of confusion the warded man had taught her. Leisha had modified the wards and embroidered them with gold thread into a fine cloak. Demons ignored her when she wore it, even if she walked right up to them, so long as she moved at a slow, steady pace and kept it wrapped around her.
Nothing against your wards, but I don't think I ever will.
I'll trust your magic fiddle to keep me safe. Why don't you trust mine?
I'm out here in the dark, aren't I? It's just eerie. I hate to say it, but your mother wasn't far off the mark when she called you a witch.
Leisha glared at him.
A ward witch, at least.
They used to call herb gathering witching, too. I'm just warding, same as anyone.
You're not the same as anyone, Leisha. A year ago, you couldn't ward a windowsill, and now the warded man himself takes lessons from you.
Hardly.
See the light. You argue his own wards with him all the time.
Arlen is still thrice the warder I am. It's just, it's hard to explain, but after looking at enough wards, the pattern started speaking to me. I can look at a new ward, and just by studying the lines of power, guess its purpose, more often than not. Sometimes, I can even change the lines to alter the effects. I've been trying to teach the knack to others, but none seems to get it.
That's what fiddling's like for me. The music speaks to me. I can teach my apprentices to play songs well enough, but you don't play the Battle of Cutter's Hollow for the Corlings to pacify them. You have to massage their mood.
I wish someone could massage my mother's mood.
About time.
Holy.
We'll be in town soon. The sooner we talk about your mom, the sooner we'll be done talking about it and can get on with our business there.
What would I do without you, Roger? You're my best friend in the world.
I just know how she gets to you.
I hate to think my mom could be right about anything.
But she often is. She sees the world with cold clarity.
Heartless clarity is more like it.
Rabbit in one hat, bunny in the other. You want children?
Of course I do. I always have. Just never seem to find the right time.
The right time or the right father?
Both. I'm only 28. With the help of herbs, I can likely carry a child to term for another 2 decades. But never as easily as I might have 10 or even 5 years ago. If I'd married Garrett, our first child might be 14 now. And there would likely have been several more after that.
Eric used to say, there's nothing gained in lamenting what never was. Of course, he was living proof of how hard those words are to live by.
Misha sighed, touching her belly and imagining the womb within. It wasn't Garrett she lamented, really. Her mother had been right about the bandits on the road, as Roger well knew. But what she had never told him, or anyone, was that it had been her fertile time when it happened, and she had feared a child might come of it. Leisha had hoped Arlen would add his seed when she seduced him a few days later. If he had, she would have raised the child, if one came, in the hope it sprang from tenderness and not violence. But the warded man had refused, vowing to have no children lest the demon magic that gave him his strength infect them somehow. So Leisha had brewed the tea she had sworn never to brew, and ensured that the bandit seed could find no purchase. When it was done, she had wept bitterly over the empty cup. By the time they reached town, half a dozen Korlings were trailing them, sniffing at the footprints in the snow beyond the radius of the cloak's magic. A woman at the edge of the forbidding raised her brow, and warded arrows struck the demons like thunderbolts, killing those that failed to flee. All the young women in Deliverer's Hollow studied the bow now, starting as soon as they could hold one. Many of the older women, not strong enough to pull a great bow, had begun learning to aim a loaded crank bow so they could throw in. The women worked in shifts to patrol the edge of town, killing any demons that ventured too close. As they came into the light, Leisha saw Wanda waiting for them. Tall, strong, and homely, it was easy to forget the girl was only coming to her 15th summer. Her father, Flynn, had died in the Battle of Cutter's Hollow, and Wanda was sorely wounded. She recovered fully, though she was badly scarred, and had become attached to Leisha during her time in the hospital. Wanda followed Leisha like a hound, ready to kill any Korling that came near. She'd carried the yew great bow the warded man had given her, and could put it to deadly use.
I wish you'd let me escort you, Mistress Leisha. You're too important to walk alone outside the forbidding.
That's what my father says.
Well, your father is right, Mistress.
Perhaps when your cloak of unsight is finished.
Really?
If you're determined to shadow my steps, I don't see there's much alternative. I gave the pattern to my apprentices to embroider last week.
Oh, thank you, Mistress.
Isn't she a little young to be venturing outside the forbidding?
The cobbled streets of Deliverer's Hollow looped and twisted awkwardly and often inconveniently, but in so doing, they formed a huge, complex ward of protection designed by the warded man himself. No Korling, big or small, could rise through the soil of the town proper, nor set foot upon it, nor fly above. The streets glowed softly, warm with magic.
She does it already. Arlen caught her out hunting demons twice last week. The girl's determined to get herself cored. I want to keep her where I can see her.
Once, the village would have been dark and silent after sunset. But now the glowing cobbles cast light for dozens of people moving to and fro. The Hollow had lost many in the battle almost a year ago, but its numbers had swelled as folks filtered in from nearby hamlets, drawn to the growing legend of the warded man. They enter the Korling's graveyard, which was once the old town square where so many demons and hollowers had perished. Despite its name, the graveyard was still the center of activity for the town. The place where the villagers trained and where the cutters assembled each night to receive the blessings of tender Jonah before heading out to hunt demons. They stood there now, heads and broad shoulders bowed, drawing wards in the air as Jonah prayed for their safety in the naked night. Other villagers stood by, heads bowed to join in the blessing. There was no sign of the warded man. He spared no time for blessings, likely already out hunting. Sometimes days passed with no sign of him other than demons' bodies freezing in the snow until the morning sun rose to burn them from the world.
There's your promised.
Roja nodded toward Garrod Cutter, who stood at the forefront of the cutters, stooping low so that tender Jonah, whom Garrod had bullied as a child, could take a charcoal stick and draw a ward on his forehead. Garrod was not the oldest of the cutters, nor the wisest by any means, but he had emerged from the Battle of Cutter's Hollow, a leader whom even the eldest followed without question. It was he who shouted at the men to train harder in the day, led the charge at night, and left more dead corlings in his wake than any save the warded man himself.
Whatever he's done to you, you have to admit, he's the sort that gets songs sung and statues made for him.
Oh, there's no denying he's beautiful. He always was, and drew others to worship him like iron to a magnet. I was one of them, once. His dad was the same way. My mother broke her wedding vows repeatedly with him. And on an animal level, I even understand it. Both men were perfect specimens on the outside. It's the inside that worries me. The cutters follow Garrod without question. But does he lead them in defense of the Hollow? Or out of love of carnage?
We thought the same about the warded man once. He proved us wrong. Perhaps Garrod will too.
I wouldn't gamble on it.
At the far end of the graveyard stood the holy house, and built onto the side of the stone building was the new hospit, completed before the first snows.
Hey, Mistress Leisha! Roger!
Then the glassblower was standing with his apprentices, who were carrying blown items and large sheets of glass. Ben gave a few quick instructions to his apprentices and came over to meet them.
How were last night's results?
Ben reached into a pocket, producing a small glass vial. Leisha took the item, running her fingers over the wards thoughtfully. It seemed like ordinary glass, but the wards were smooth, as if the bottle had been heated again after they were etched.
Try and break it.
Leisha cast the vial down onto the cobbles as hard as she could, but the glass only bounced. She picked it up, studying it closely. There wasn't the slightest mark upon it.
Impressive! Your warden is improving!
You can break one on an anvil if you're determined, but it ain't easy.
They should resist even that. Let me see one you haven't charged yet.
Ben nodded, signaling an apprentice who brought the other vial, almost identical to the first.
Here's one we mean to charge tonight.
Leisha studied the vial closely, tracing her fingernail down into the grooves of the etching.
Might be that the depth of the groove affects the power of the charge. I'll think on it.
She slipped the vials into a pocket in her apron for later study.
We've got the production running smoothly now. Ben and his apprentices blow and ward by day. My apprentices and I lure corlings in to charge them at night. Soon every home will have windows of warded glass, and we'll be able to store liquid demon fire in quantity without fear.
I'd like to observe the charging tonight.
Of course.
Mistress Leisha?
Vika greeted her with a curtsy as they arrived at the hospit. She was a plain woman, neither beautiful nor ugly, sturdily built with breeder's hips and a round face.
You don't have to curtsy every night, Vika.
Of course I do. You're town gatherer.
Vika was a full herb gatherer herself, but she and Darcy, both years Leisha's senior, accepted Leisha as their leader.
I doubt Bruna put up with that.
The old crone was too blind to see it.
The daughter of Cutterstock, Darcy was tall and heavyset, though more with muscle than fat. She could overmatch most men at festival feats of strength, and the heavy warded blade at her waist had cut the limbs from more than one demon seeking to finish off an injured person on the battlefield.
Hospit's ready if the cutters come back with wounded.
Thank you, Darcy.
The hospit was always busiest at midnight, when cutters came back from the hunt. Even against warded axes, wood demons could be a terrifying foe. Under the canopy of trees, their skin blended into the bark as if they wore coats of unsight, and while some walked the forest floor, looking much like trees themselves, others stalked the limbs like monkeys, dropping unexpectedly on their prey.
What are the apprentices working on?
Eldest are embroidering your cloak patterns. The rest are sterilizing instruments and practicing their letters.
I've brought fresh books and a new grimoire I've completed.
I'll have it copied right away.
You have your gatherer's apprentices copying wards. Isn't that better handled by warder's apprentices? I could have a word.
Every one of my girls gets warden lessons now. I won't have them left helpless at sunset like we were.
Leaving Leisha to make her rounds in the hospit, Roger went over to the music shell at the edge of the square where his apprentices gathered. They were a mixed bunch, as motley as Roger's pants. Some were hollowers, but most had come from other towns, drawn to the tales of the warded man. Half of them were too old to lift a tool or weapon, and so they decided to try the fiddle, only to find that their fingers lacked the necessary dexterity. Several others were children whose skill might not tell for many years. Only a handful of the remainder showed promise. Pretty Kendall, most of all. She was Rhizonian and new to the Hollow. Old enough to handle complex arrangements, but young enough to still learn quickly, she had a real aptitude for music. She was slender and quick, as adept at tumbling and acrobatics as fiddling. She would make a fine jongleur one day. Roger quickly put bow to fiddle, turning his guilt and frustration into music. He let the emotions drift off with the sounds, and he looked back to his apprentices and made the music speak to them, giving the hope and encouragement his words lacked. As he played, folk began to straighten, their eyes growing determined once more.
That was beautiful, Roger.
Roger saw Kendall standing beside him. He hadn't even noticed her approach, lost in his music.
Are you thirsty? I brewed sweet tea. Still hot.
Never much cared for sweet tea. Makes my hands shake.
Oh, well, that's all right.
I want you to solo tonight. I think you're ready.
Really?
She threw her arms around him, hugging a bit longer than was precisely necessary. Of course, that was when Leisha chose to arrive. Roger stiffened, and Kendall pulled back in confusion until she saw Leisha. She quickly stepped away from Roger and dipped into a curtsy.
Mistress Leisha?
Kendall! Is that sweet tea I smell?
Run and fetch your fiddle, Kendall. Kendall is going to try a solo tonight.
Is she ready for that?
Is Wanda ready to hunt Corlings? I was younger than Kendall when I first charmed a demon.
Your need was more dire.
It's safe. I'll be ready to take over if I'm needed, and the women will be watching with arrows knocked.
They began preparations by ordering the archers to keep clear a wide area of ground past the edge of the Forbiddens. Roger then walked alone outside the Forbiddens, calling with his music, controlling each step forward the Corlings took until they were arranged as he liked.
Kendall!
The girl stepped forward and began to play. The mesmerized demons were left to her sole control. Roger went to where Leisha waited by the ward's edge.
She really is quite good. The demons will follow her around like puppies, charging everything they touch.
Then, Kendall misstepped. A bottle shattered under her foot, sending glass through the soft leather of her shoe. Immediately, the Corlings perked up, and her spell shattered. Their nostrils flared as they caught the scent of her blood as they launched themselves at her. Roger broke into a run, but he had drifted far away to speak to Leisha, and one of the Corlings buried its talons deep in Kendall's body, pulling her close and sinking rows of teeth into her shoulder before he could get in range.
Archers!
We'll hit Kendall!
They broke off their attack, Kendall collapsing to the ground, but there was blood in the air now, and they were not easily driven back.
Kendall! Kendall!
Suddenly a huge shape swept by Roger, nearly bowling him over. He looked up to see Garrett tackle one of the wood demons into another. Both Corlings were brought down under the burly cutter's weight, and the wards on his gauntlets flared brightly as he laid heavy blows on the one he had landed upon. By the time the other recovered, he was up again, but the Corling was quick and bit hard into his arm. Garrett grabbed the demon's crotch with his free hand. He flexed his mighty arms, lifting the huge wood demon and using it as a ram to drive into its fellows. He and the demons all went down in a tumble, just as other cutters rushed in, hacking at the prone creatures with warded axes. His fiddle useless amid the commotion, Roger hurried to Kendall's side, staining his cloak with blood as he threw it over her. Roger struggled to lift her. Garrett kicked in the hospit door.
I need a blood donor!
They laid Kendall on a bed, and apprentices ran for Leisha's instruments.
I'll do it.
Check if he's a match.
Vika quickly lanced a sample from Roger as Darcy tried to have a look at Garrett's arm.
Worry about those that are hurt worse.
There was a whirlwind of bloodied activity as the herb gatherers worked. Leisha cut and clamped and sewed Kendall for 2 hours as Roger looked on, dizzy from the blood transfusion. At last, Leisha paused to drag the back of a bloodied hand over her sweating brow.
Will she be all right?
She'll live. Garrett, I'll have a look at that arm now.
No, it's just a scratch.
You were bit by a demon, Gare. You let the wound fester, and I'll be cutting that arm off before you know it. Get over here.
Garrett complied. Charged by the magic he had absorbed, the clean cuts from the demon's sharp teeth were already closing.
It's not so bad.
She wrapped the arm in a clean bandage and then took Roger aside.
I told you Kendall wasn't ready for a solo.
I thought that...
You didn't think. You were showing off, and it almost cost that girl her life. This isn't a game, Roger.
I know it isn't a game.
Then act like it.
We're not all as perfect as you, Leisha.
Come to my office.
Roger followed Leisha to her office, where she poured him a glass of hard alcohol, more suited to antiseptics than consumption.
I'm sorry. I was out of the light.
No, you weren't. I'm a fraud.
Nonsense. We all make mistakes.
I didn't make a mistake. I lied. I lied and said I could teach people how to charm Corlings when in truth, I don't even understand how I do it myself. Just like I lied last year and told you I could see you safely here from Angiers. It's how I made my way into the Hamlets after Eric died. And how I got into the Jongleurs Guild. Seems lying is all I ever do.
But why?
I keep telling myself, pretending to be something's the same as being it. Like if I just pretend to be great like you and the warded man, it will be so.
There's nothing so great about me, Roger. You know that better than anyone.
You don't even see it. An endless line of weapons and wards comes from your hut. The sick and injured chored in a wave of your hand. All I can do is play my fiddle, and I can't even save a life when I do. You and the warded man have become giants while I spend months teaching my apprentices, and all they're good for is getting folk to dance.
Don't belittle the joy you and your apprentices have brought to a town fraught with hardship.
I do nothing a keg of ale can't do on its own.
That's ridiculous! Your magic is as strong as Arlen's or mine. The fact that you have such trouble teaching it is just proof of how special you are. Besides, however big I grow, I'll always have my mum to cut me back down.
It was a moonless night, and where Leisha and Roger walked, far from the glow of the great ward, the darkness was near complete. Leisha walked with a tall staff, the end of which held a flask of chemics that glowed fiercely, casting light for them to make their way by. The flask and staff were etched with wards of unsight. Corlings could see the light, but they could no more find the source than they could find the two of them in their warded cloaks.
Don't see why he couldn't meet us in town. He might not feel the cold, but I do.
Some things are best said in private, and he tends to draw a crowd.
The warded man was waiting for them on the warded path leading to Leisha's cottage. Twilight Dancer, his enormous black stallion, was in full barding and horns, nearly invisible in the darkness. The warded man himself wore only a loincloth, his tattooed skin bare to the cold.
You're late.
Had some problems at the hospital. An accident while we were charging glass. Why aren't you wearing your cloak?
It's in my saddlebag. I'm not looking to hide from the Corlings. They want to come at me? Let them. World could do with a few less.
They tied Twilight Dancer to a hitching post in the yard and went inside. Leisha took a match from her apron and lit the fire, filling a kettle and hanging it over the blaze.
How are the fiddle wizards coming along?
More fiddle than wizard, I'm afraid. They're not ready.
Cutter patrols would be stronger with a fiddler who can manipulate the demon's emotions.
I can patrol with them. I have my cloak to keep me safe.
We need you teaching.
I'll do what I can.
And the Hollow?
expanding quickly. Already we have twice as many people as we had before the flux last year, and more come in daily. We plan the new town to accommodate growth, but not at this rate.
We can have the Cutters clear more land and plot another Great Ward.
We need the lumber anyway. We haven't sent a shipment to Duke Rhinebeck in over a year.
Had to rebuild the entire village.
Perhaps you'd like to explain that to the Duke. He sent another messenger requesting an audience. They fear you and your plans for the Hollow.
They ain't got any plans beyond making the Hollow secure from the Corlings. When that's done, I'll be on my way.
What about the Great War on Demonkind? You have to lead the people to it.
Oh, correspondent boy, I'm not the ripping deliverer. This isn't some fantasy from a tender's cannon, and I wasn't sent from heaven to unite mankind. I'm just Arlen Bales of Tibbetts Brook, a stupid boy with more luck than he deserved. Most of it bad.
But there's no one else. If you don't lead the war, who will?
Not my problem. I won't force war on anyone. All I aim to do is make sure that anyone who wants to fight can. Once that boulder shifts, I mean to get out of the way.
But why?
Because he doesn't think he's human. He thinks he's so tainted by Corlin magic that he's as much a danger to us as they are, even though there's not a shred of proof.
There's proof.
What?
What I say stays in this cottage, if I even hear a hint of it in song or tale.
Swear by the sun as it shines. Not a whisper.
It's uncomfortable for me, in the forbidding.
Leisha had sworn to find a cure for the warded man, or at least the details of his condition, and she meant to keep that vow. He'd saved her life, and that of everyone in the Hollow. She owed him that much and more.
What are the symptoms? What happens when you step onto the ward?
There's resistance. Like I'm walking against a strong gust of wind. I feel the ward warming beneath my feet and myself getting cold. When I walk through the town, it's like wading through hip-deep water. I pretend otherwise and no one seems to notice, but I know. The Forbiddance wants to expel me, Leisha, as it would any demon. It knows I don't belong among men any longer.
Nonsense! The ward siphon has just drawn away some of the magic you've absorbed.
It's not just that. The cloaks of unsight make me dizzy, and I can feel warded blades warm and sharpen at my touch. I fear I become more demon every day.
Leisha took one of the warded glass vials from her apron pocket and handed it to him.
Crush it.
The warded man shrugged, squeezing as hard as he could. Stronger than 10 men, he could easily shatter glass. But the vial resisted even his grip.
Warded glass. So what? I taught you that trick myself.
That wasn't charged till you touched it.
Proof of what I'm saying.
The only thing it proves is that we need more tests. I finished copying your tattoos and studying them. I think the next step is to start experimenting on volunteers.
What?
I can make a stain from black stem leaves that will stay in the skin no more than 2 weeks. I can perform controlled tests and mark the results. I'm certain we can...
Absolutely not! I forbid it!
You forbid? Are you the deliverer to order folk about? You can forbid me nothing, Arlen Bales at Tibbetts Brook.
Please, don't risk it.
People are gonna imitate you. Already, Jonah is drawing wards on people with charcoal sticks.
He'll stop if I tell him to.
Only because he thinks you're the deliverer.
It won't make any difference. It's only a matter of time before your legend draws a tattooist to the Hollow. And then there will be no stopping it. Better we experiment now, in control.
Please, don't curse anyone else with my condition.
You're not cursed.
Oh? Roger, do you have one of your throwing knives?
Roger flicked his wrist and a knife appeared in his hand.
Throw it at me.
What?
The knife. Throw it. Right at my heart.
No!
You throw knives at people all the time.
As a trick. I'm not gonna throw one at your heart. Are you insane? Even if you can use your demon speed to dodge.
You then, Leisha. Throw something.
He hadn't even finished the sentence before Leisha snatched a frying pan off a hook by the fire and hurled it at him. But the pan never struck home. The warded man turned into mist as the iron passed through, dissipating his body as if waved through smoke. It took several seconds for the mists to coalesce again, reforming into the body of the warded man.
I've been practicing. Dissipation is easy. Like relaxing your molecules and spreading them the way boiling spreads water into steam. Can't do it in the sunlight, but at night, I can do it at will. Pulling back together is harder. Sometimes I worry I'll spread too thin and just drift away on the wind.
That sounds horrible.
But that's not the worst of it. When I dissipate, I can feel the core pulling at me. When the dawn is near, the pull can become insistent.
Like that day on the road, in the pre-dawn light.
Arlen turned away from her.
I'm so sorry.
You didn't make my choices for me.
This can't be just the tattoos. It makes no sense. I want your grimoires. All of them. Everything I learned from you is filtered by your understanding. I need the source material to understand what's causing this.
I don't have them here.
Then we'll go to them. Where are they?
The nearest cache is in Angiers, though I have others in Lacton and out on the Crasian Desert.
Angiers will do nicely. I have unfinished business with Mistress Giselle, and perhaps you can convince the Duke you're not after his crown while we're there.
I might be able to help there. I grew up in Rhinebeck's court while Eric was his herald. I'll visit the Jongleurs Guild while we're there and maybe hire some proper teachers for my apprentices.
All right. We'll go at first melt.
The broad wings of the Mimic ate the miles, but the Corling Prince hated the brightness of the surface and twice took shelter in the core for all but the darkest hours of the night. It was now the night after the new moon, and even the effects of that minute sliver were brightness to the demon's core-spawned eyes. When it returned to the core, it would not rise again until the cursed orb waxed and waned a full turn. The great ward of Deliverer's Hollow came into sight below, its stolen magic shining like a beacon. The mind demon's forehead pulsed as it sent the image hundreds of miles to the south in an instant, resonating in the mind of its brother. A reply came instantly, the demon's cranium reverberating with its brother's frustration. The mimic landed, and the mind demon dismounted. Immediately, the mimic shed its wings and became a nimble flame demon, darting ahead to ensure that the path of the Corling Prince was clear as it made its way toward the village. The great ward was too large to mar and too powerful for even a Corling Prince to overcome. The demon could see the accumulated magic shimmering around the village's barrier, more solid than stone. It reached out with its thoughts, the soft nodules on its cranium pulsing as it tried to touch the minds of those within, but the sheer concentration of magic blocked even mental intrusion. The demon circled the town, noting the terrain around the twists and turns of the ward. A strong defense with few weaknesses, and those not easily exploited. Drones drifted out of the trees, drawn to the Corling Prince's presence, but a thought drove them off. It found a place where two human females stood at the edge of the ward, armed with primitive weapons. The demon listened carefully to their grunts and yelps, waiting for a particular intonation that signaled address. It came soon, and the females clutched each other before dividing to walk the edge in different directions, their weapons at the ready. The mind demon ran ahead of the elder of the two, waiting in an isolated spot until the woman reappeared. It signaled the mimic, and its servant swelled, scales melting away to be replaced by pink skin and the outer wrappings of the surface stock. The mimic fell to the ground in the shadows just outside the forbidding as the elder female approached.
Mala! Awanda!
She looked about frantically, but seeing no demon, she ran to what she assumed was her friend.
I just left you. How'd you get out here?
The mind demon stepped from behind a tree, and the female raised her bow. The nodules on the Corling Prince's cranium throbbed softly, and the female stiffened, hands lowering her weapon against her will. The mind demon approached, and the female held out the projectile she had meant to launch for its inspection. The wards on the projectile were powerfully shaped. The mind demon could feel them tugging at its own potent magic. It waved a taloned hand at them, marveling at how they began to glow, even with its flesh still inches away. The demon prince probed the mind of its victim deeply, sifting through images and memories as one might rummage in an old trunk. It learned much, too much to act upon without further consideration. It was hours before dawn, but already the sky was brightening. Far to the south, it sensed its brother's agreement, There was time to reflect upon the problem. The mind demon regarded the female. It could steal the memory of this event from her, send her back into the forbidding, never knowing what had happened. But the touch of the human's mind, fat and largely unused, aroused its hunger. Sensing its master's desire, the mimic sent a sharp tentacle to sever the female's head. Slithered over, peeling the skull open with a talon to present the meal. The crawling prince tore at the sweet gray matter within, gorging itself. The meat was not as tender as the ignorant brains of its personal stock, but there was a satisfaction to hunting on the surface that added pleasure to the repast. The demon looked to its mimic, standing vigilant as the crawling prince feasted. A throb of permission, and the mimic swelled, opening an enormous many-toothed maw and slithering over to the female, swallowing the remainder of her body whole. When master and servant alike were sated, they dissolved into mist, slipping back down to the core as the sky continued to brighten. 333 AR, spring. Renna's strong arms burned, coated in a thin sheen of sweat as she worked the butter churn. It was early spring, but she was clad only in her shift. Her father would have a fit if he saw her, but he was around back cutting ward posts, and Lukic and the boys were out in the fields. The farm had grown in the 14 years since Lukic came to live with them, marrying Benny and putting children in her. There had been a hard season after Elaine ran off with Jeff Bales. Harl had raged and taken it out on them, mostly on Benny, since she was elder. But that had all stopped when Lukic, with his thick arms and broad shoulders, came to live with them. Harl hadn't touched either of them since, and the fields, once little more than a large garden, had gotten bigger every year. Thinking of that time made her think again of Arlen Bales and what might have been. When they were promised, it was agreed that she was to be the one to go and live on Jeff's farm, not Elaine. But Arlen had run off into the woods after his mother passed and was never heard from again. Folks said he must be dead, especially after Jeff went to Sunny Pasture to search and hadn't found him. The Free Cities were weeks away on foot, and no one could survive that many nights without succor. But Renna had never given up hope. Her eyes were always searching the road east, praying that one day he would come and take her away. She looked up just then and saw a horseman coming down the road. Her heart stopped for a moment, but the rider came from the west, and after a moment, she recognized him. Kobe Fisher sat tall on Pinecone, one of Old Hog's dappled mares, his patchwork armor and hammered cookpot helmet polished carefully. His spear and shield were strapped to the saddle in easy reach, though she had never heard tell of him using them. Kobe fancied himself a messenger, but he didn't brave the night like real messengers. He simply ferried goods and word from one end of the brook to another for Roscoe Hogg, who ran the general store. Once or twice, Kobe had slept in their barn on his way north to Sunny Pasture.
Hey, Renna!
Off to Sunny Pasture again.
I've a message for Lukic.
So late in the day? What could be so important?
She caught a look in Kobe's eye and began to worry. The last time someone had come with a message for Lukic, barely 2 years past, it was that his brother Kenner had gotten drunk testing ale from the vats and stumbled out beyond the wards. By the time the sun banished the demons, there was barely anything left of him to burn.
Everyone's all right, ain't they?
Lukic's dad passed this morning.
Fernanbogen had always been kind to her when he came to see his grandchildren. She would miss him.
Renna, get inside and cover yourself, girl. This ain't no Angerian house of sin.
Renna knew that tone and left Kobe with his mouth open as she turned and hurried inside. She stopped at the door to watch Harl stride out to meet Kobe, who was tying Pinecone to the hitching post. Her father was wrinkled and gray, but he seemed to only toughen with age, his wiry muscles hard from working the fields and his skin leathern and tough. Harl had wanted to find Renna a husband before Elaine left, but since, he had scared off any boy who even looked her way. Kobe was taller than Harl, though, and wider, one of the biggest men in Tibbetts Brook. Hogg had chosen him as his messenger because he had more than a little bully in him still and didn't scare easily, especially with his armor on.
What's a commotion?
Benny was near the fire where she was chopping vegetables into the stew.
Kobe Fisher's coming from Town Square.
Did he say why? Messengers don't just come to say hello.
Dak called me in before he could say.
Rena hurried to the curtain in her corner of the common room, pulling off her dirty shift and putting on a dress. She was still lacing the stays when she exited the curtain and caught Kobe looking at her again.
Correspondent, Rena!
She vanished behind the curtain until she was properly done up. Harl scowled when she re-emerged.
Run and fetch Lukic from the fields, girl, and keep the boys out in the barn.
Rena nodded, darting out the door. She found Lukic tending the ward posts at the far end of the fields, just before the ground turned black, scorched clean by flame demons. Cal and Jace were with him, digging weeds while their father worked. They were 7 and 10.
Lukic, you have a visitor.
Hey?
Kobe Fisher, with news from your ma'am.
Fear flashed on Lukic's face, and he set off at once. Rena led the boys back and set them to work leading the hogs and cows from the day pens into the big barn. Rena untethered Pinecone herself, leading the mare into the small barn off the back of the house where they kept their mollies and the chickens. She fed the chickens while the boys went about their chores, but her eyes kept glancing to the door, to the house. She had seen 24 summers, but Harl still treated her like a child, sheltering her as much as he did the boys. After a time, the door opened, and Benny stuck her head out.
Supper's ready. Everyone wash up.
The dinner table only sat 6, so the boys were sent to eat by the fire in the common room. Having no idea anything was amiss, they scampered off happily.
We'll head out first thing in the morning. With Dan Kenner gone, Mam is going to need a man around before Hog starts buying marsh ale again.
Can't someone else take it on? Fernan Young's near a man.
Fernan Young was Kenner's son, named after his grandfather.
Fernie's only 12, Harl. He can't be trusted to run the brewery.
And what about your sister? She married that Fisher boy a couple summers ago.
Jash.
He's a Fisher. He might be able to scale and gut, but he won't know nigh about brewing. No offense, Kobe.
None taken. Jash is apt to drink more than he brews anyway.
You're one to talk. Well, as I hear, Hog made you his message boy when you couldn't pay all the ale credits you owed. Maybe it's you ought to be up at the brewery working off your drink.
You got some stones, old man.
No, it's good for you, boy. You'll sit your ass back down.
Of course, Spawnit.
Just like that? You up and desert us? What about the farm?
The spring planting's done. You and Renner should be able to weed and keep the ward post till harvest time, and me and the boys will come back for that. Fernie, too.
And next year?
I don't know. We can all come to plant, and might be I can spare one of the boys for summer.
I thought we was family, boy. But it looks like you've always been a bargain at heart. I do as you want. Take my daughter and grandsons away from me, but don't expect a slap on the back for it.
Harl.
He didn't mean it like that.
Oh, Ben. Of course he did.
Come on.
Rena grabbed Kobe's arm and pulled him from his seat.
Let's leave him in peace and find you some blankets and a clean spot in the barn.
Kobe nodded, following her out of the curtain.
Your day always like this?
He took it better than I expected.
Rena took a broom and swept out one of the empty stalls.
Lukic has just lost his day. You think Harold show a little heart?
Not my day. He don't care about any needs but his own.
After Kobe was safely settled in the barn, Rena came back into the house to find Lukic in the common room, explaining things to the boys. She slipped quietly by and went into Benny's room, finding her sister folding clothes and packing her few belongings.
Take me with you.
What?
I don't want to be alone with him. I can't.
Rena, what are you talking?
Don't pretend you don't know what I'm talking about. You know what he was like before Lukic came.
What do you know of it? You were always a baby. You never had to endure.
I'm not a baby anymore, Benny.
Then bind your breasts. Stop running about and adjust your shift. Don't give him a reason to notice you.
That won't stop him, and you know it.
Been almost 15 years, Ren. You don't know what he'll do.
But Rena did know. In her heart, she had no doubt. She had seen her father looking at her, his eyes running over her body like greedy hands. Why else did he react so jealously whenever a man glanced her way? More than one had come courting when she was younger. They knew better now.
Please, take me with you.
And what'll I tell Lukic? He feels bad enough leaving the farm untended. Without you, Dad ain't never gonna be able to handle the load.
You could tell him the truth.
Get that out of your head. I ain't gonna make my family bear that shame. Lukic would turn me out if he knew. And before long, the whole town would hear tell. And what of Elaine? Should Jeff and her children have to carry that stain too? All because of you being a baby?
I'm not being a baby!
Keep your voice down.
I'm not being a baby just because I don't want to be left alone with that monster.
He ain't a demon, Rena. He's her dad. He's given us sucker and put food on the table all our lives. Even though his heart broke when Ma died. Elaine and I took it. And if it comes to that, you can too.
Elaine took it by running to hide behind Jeff just like you hide behind Lukic. But who do I have to hide behind, Ben?
You can't come with us, Rena.
Just then, Lukic walked into the room.
Everything all right? I heard raised voices.
Everything's fine.
Rena sat up, bathed in sweat, her heart pounding. She peeked around the curtain and saw the boys fast asleep on their blankets. Clad only in her shift, she crept through the common and eased open the barn door, slipping quietly within. Inside, she took the striker and lit a lantern, casting the barn in a flickering light.
Who's that?
It's Rena.
The lantern light danced around the stall, flickering over Kobe's broad chest as his blanket slipped down.
Don't get visitors often. Thought we could sit and talk a spell.
Oh, sounds nice.
Have to be quiet, though. If Dad catches us, there'll be the core to pay.
Kobe nodded, flicking a nervous eye in the direction of the house door.
What's it like being a messenger?
Well, I ain't a real messenger. Ain't licensed by the guild in the free cities, and don't think I'd be fool enough to sleep outside with demons, even if I were. But working for Mr. Hogg beats fishing. I always hated that.
Way I hear tell, you never did much of it.
True enough. Used to just run and fool about with Gart and Willem, but they got promised and stopped having time for it. Can't laugh out on the boats. Scared as a fish.
How come you never got promised yourself?
Dad says it's because girls' fathers didn't think I could settle and provide for a wife and youngins. He was right, I guess. I was always more interested in hanging around the general store than working. Fished when I had to, but never had enough credits to pay for all the ale I drank. Your dad was right that Mr. Hogg started sending me to fetch this or deliver that just to balance the log. But when the speaker started asking Mr. Hogg to have me ferry messages around too, he said I could stay in the little room behind the store to be on hand. People treat me with respect now because I'm on town business. They give me meals and sucker when it's too far to go back to town square before in dark.
Bet it's nice, traveling all over the brook and seeing everyone all the time. I never see anyone.
I earn more than I drink now. And when I have enough credits, I'm going to buy a horse of my own and change my name to Kobe Messenger. Maybe build a house in town square and have sons take on the job when I'm old.
So you think you could settle and provide now?
I might, if a girl took her chances on me.
Rena leaned in and kissed him on the mouth.
I know a wife's tricks. I've seen Benny and Luke get at it plenty of times. I could be a good wife.
What in the car's going on here?
Harl grabbed Rena by the hair and pulled her off Kobe. In his free hand, he held his long hunting knife, sharp as a razor. He threw Rena aside and put the point up to Kobe's throat.
We were just... I ain't no fool, boy. I know what you were just. You think because I give you sucker behind my wards, you can go and treat my daughter like some Angerian whore? I ought to gut you right here. Please. I didn't like that. I really like Rena. I want her hand. I expect you wanted more than that. You think that's how it works? Come stick a girl, then ask for her hand?
Kobe pulled his head back as far as he could, tears and sweat mixing on his face.
Well, that's enough.
Lukic grabbed Harl's arm, pulling the knife away. Harl whirled to his feet, and the two men stood glaring at each other.
You wouldn't say that if it were your daughter.
That may be, but I ain't gonna let you kill a man in front of my boys either.
Fine. Rena, you're sleeping in my room tonight so I can keep an eye on you. And you, boy, you so much as look at my girl again, and I'll cut your stones off and feed them to the Corlings.
He grabbed Renna by the arm and dragged her along as he stormed into the house. Renna was still shaking when Harl threw her down on the bed.
This is what you do when we have a visitor in the barn? How about half the town is laughing behind my back?
I never!
Oh, I'm supposed to believe that now? I saw the way you paraded around half-dressed for him today. Reckon the hogs aren't all that's grunting in the barn with a messenger boy's about.
Renna had no reply. She pulled the blanket around her bare shoulders.
Oh, now you're shy and trying to cover. Might late, you ask me.
Harl undid his overalls and slung them over the bedpost, snatching the edge of the blanket and sliding in beside her. Renna shuddered.
Quit your whining and get some sleep, girl. Another of your sisters is up and deserted us, and there'll be extra chores for both of us from now on.
Renna woke early, finding her father snuggled close with an arm over her. She eased out of his grasp and left him snoring as she fled the room. Remembering Benny's advice, she tore a long strip from the sheet on her pallet, wrapping the cloth around her chest several times, binding her breasts tight. When she was done, she looked down. Even flattened, no one would ever mistake her for a boy. After morning chores, Harl hitched the cart and drove them all up through town square to Boggins Hill for the cremation. It was afternoon by the time they arrived, and by then there was a big gathering on the hill. Most everyone in Tibbetts Brook drank Boggins' ale, and many came to pay their respects as Fernan Boggin was burned. The holy house crowned the hill, and Tender Harrell welcomed everyone warmly. He was a big man, not yet 50, with powerful arms reaching out from the rolled sleeves of his brown robe.
Your dad was a good friend, good man. We'll all miss him.
Harrell gestured to the great doors.
Go on inside and sit in the front pew with your mom.
Looks like the ingrates come down from hiding.
They slid into the pew behind Lukic, Benny, and the boys. Renna followed his gaze to see her eldest sister Elaine a few rows back. She stood with Jeff, Noreen Cutter, and her children. They had all gotten so big.
Don't even think about it.
Harl had never forgiven Elaine for running off, though it was near 15 years gone. And it also meant that he never knew his grandchildren by her.
That sumbitch got a lot of nerve coming here.
Harl glared at Jeff.
Another correspond thief thinking just because I give him sucker they can run off with one of my girls. Just as well you didn't end up married to that good-for-nothing son of his.
Arlen wasn't good-for-nothing.
What's that, girl?
Nothing.
The ceremony went on with Harl singing the praises of Fernan Boggin as he painted wards on the tarp wrapping the body to protect Fernan's spirit as it made its way to the Creator. When it was done, they carried the body out to the pyre Harl had built and laid him to rest as the fire burned. Renna drew wards in the air along with everyone else, praying that Fernan's soul would escape this demon-infested world as the flames consumed his body. On the other side of the fire, Elaine stared sadly at her. She raised a hand to wave, and people began to drift off as the fire burned down, some to Maida Boggin's house, where she had refreshments ready for her husband's mourners, and others beginning the trek back to their homes. Some had come from a ways off, and the Corlings rose no later on funeral days.
Come on, girl. We'd best be getting back.
Harl Tanner! Moment of your time!
Harl and Renna turned to see the tender approaching with Kobe Fisher in tow. Kobe's eyes were firmly on his feet.
What now?
Kobe told me what happened last night.
Oh, did he? Did he tell you I caught him and my daughter in sinful embrace under my own wards?
He did, and he has something to say now. Don't you, Kobe?
I'm sorry for what I done. I didn't mean no shame, no one. I intend to make an honest woman of Renna, if you'll allow it.
The core I will!
Now, Harl, wait just a minute.
No, you wait, Tender. This boy disrespected me, my daughter, and the sanctity of my wards. And you want me to take him as a son just like that? Well, I'd sooner let Renna marry a wood demon.
Renna's past the age where she ought to be married and raising youngins of her own.
That don't mean I gotta hand her over to some drunken wastrel just because he bent her over a hay bale.
Harl grabbed Renna and dragged her toward the cart. Renna looked longingly at Kobe as they rode off. Renna cast a wistful eye back up the road as the farm came into sight.
I know what you're thinking, girl.
You're thinking of being like your ingrate sister and running off to be with that boy.
Renna said nothing, but she felt her cheeks burn, and that was damning enough.
Well, you think twice about it. I won't let you shame our family like Lainey did. Running off with a man whose wife just died the night before. The whole town still talks of it. And they all cast a dark eye on old Harl for raising such a correspond whore. You're on your way to getting the same reputation. Well, not this time, girlie. I'd rather scar the wards than go through that again. You even think about running, and you'll have yourself a trip to the outhouse. Even if I have to go all the way to Southwatch to collect you.
Renna glanced at the tiny ramshackle structure in the yard, and her blood went cold. Her father had never put her in there, but he had done it to Elaine a few times, and to Benny once. She remembered their screams vividly.